Hello, and welcome to the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative to record America's family history in sound. Oral histories are one of the most personal and rewarding ways to preserve family stories. The Tell Me a Story sessions are 45-minute interviews between two people with the assistance of a trained facilitator. Participants will receive a compact disc with the full interview. A copy will be archived at the Midwest Genealogy Center and, with permission, later made available to the public. And now, another story.
So, I'm Michelle Cotton. I work here at Midwest Genealogy Center, and today I'm talking with Keith Zimmerman about his military experience. So, Keith, please tell us what branch of the military you served in and where you're from.
I was in the Army, and I lived in Independence at the time I was drafted, and that was 1943, after I turned age 18, and I got the letter from the people uptown in
Uncle Sam
in the second floor of the Memorial Building. They mailed a letter to me on the 1st of July and said for me to come up there on the 21st of July, and I would be going to the post over in Kansas, and I would be given a physical, and then they'll take a test or two on my abilities and what things I knew. And we were there about 2 days, and they swore us in, and then they put us on leave for 21 days, and I reported back on August the 12th. To go to my first assignment, which was in Georgia.
So was that basic training?
Yes.
It was. Okay.
And it happened to be that I, along with a number of other people my age, had taken tests to go into a program called ASTP, which meant Army Specialized Army Specialized Program, and we were went through basic training, the whole bunch of us, and at the end of training, which was approximately 3 months, we were assigned to a university that was the closest to our homes. I was assigned to go to Michigan.
Okay, and, Michigan.
And we were housed in some of the houses of the different normal societies, and the building I was in was right on the edge of the lake, and we arrived there in about the 1st of November. And pretty soon at night, we'd hear, as we tried to sleep, the lake was freezing over, and then you hear the ice crashing. And,
oh, my.
And but every morning we went out and had inspection to make sure we were all there. And then I've forgotten where we ate, but anyhow, we had breakfast and then started our classes. And our classes were basically to make engineers out of us.
Okay.
And then at Christmas time, I got a pass to go home because I lived in the Kansas City area there still. And you aren't supposed to get a pass to go as far as I did, but I got on the Milwaukee Railroad there and came right to Kansas City and stayed home for a couple of days and then had to hurry back.
Okay.
And wasn't too long till the end of the semester was, And I came up with one D in my grading.
Oh.
That put an end to my schooling.
Really?
And I was sent to place to wait for orders where I would go next. And I was just outside of Chicago, and it was February, and the railroads wanted some help to sweep out the snow out of some of their switches in Chicago, and so I volunteered for that. And they took us down in a train, and they had a bunch of Navy guys, too. And we were down there and brushed the snow out of those switches so that they would work properly.
Right.
And we were there for about 8 hours, and we got paid $1 an hour.
Oh, my.
And then they took out railroad retirement pay of 1%, which is only 8 cents. But we went back on up to our temporary base, and we got orders to go to California. And there was another fellow there from Missouri, and he had the same problem. He got a D, and so we went out by train and into the desert, and arrived there in out in the desert, and I think Blythe was the closest town, and the division was the 104th Infantry Division, known as the Timberwolves, but they were on a project and hadn't finished it, and so we were put up in tents, and when they assigned us our tent, they handed us 4 wool blankets, and I wondered if I really needed that many. But by the next morning, I knew I was glad I had them.
So it got really cold in the desert at night.
Yes, it did.
Oh, my. Like, how cold was it?
I don't know. I didn't see
4 blankets cold, I guess. Okay, so then what happened? Did you ever get shipped off to a front somewhere, or how much more time did you spend in the U.S.?
Well, we were shipped to Camp Carson, Colorado, and in Colorado Springs, and we arrived there on 15th of March in a blizzard. And so I didn't know one direction or another in several days before we could see Pike's Peak. But that was the worst storm that we had up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was assigned to what was called a defense platoon, which guarded the division headquarters. And the general had set up a program for a group of us to train as, to see these areas and make a note of it to give to the headquarters that how this looked like, what Lamay Hills or different things that would be coming up.
Like land surveying? Like surveying the area and topography or?
No, it was really to see about personnel hiding when they're looking around to see. So if, instead of walking into a house and walking across where the windows were, you went back against the wall on the backside so your enemy couldn't see you.
Oh, I see. Okay. And did you enjoy doing that? Was it exciting?
Well, it was different. We saw different movies and lectures from the different lieutenants. And then one night near the end of the course, it was still snowy time, but we were taken south of the main base and dumped off there and told that we would gather, and at a certain time we'd take our trip across the pretty good-sized hill and go down and capture the area that was down below, and which we did, and the trucks weren't going to come back for us till 6:30 in the morning, and we got through at 2:30, and it had started snowing, and so there was some wood around there, and we gathered up and got a fire going, and I laid down by it and roasted one side of me and froze the other side.
Okay.
But that's so the way it goes in the Army.
So those were training exercises?
Yes.
And how long were you there doing that sort of thing?
Well, we got orders in, I think it was late July, okay, to get ready and proceed to the East Coast and to camp there. And we would get our last shots and anything else that needed to be done before we went overseas.
Okay.
And I think it took four different train groups to take the whole division, because there's 15,000 men in a division. And we were in Camp Kilmer, New Jersey, which is just outside of New York City. And we were there for about a week, and we got our shots, and they checked out everything else that was needed to be loaded in to the ships so we'd have it when we got overseas. But I did get a pass one night to go into New York City, and so I got on a train, or maybe it was an urban, I don't know, but it got me into New York City, and I went up in the tallest building they had, so I could look around and see what I could see from there. Mm-hmm. And what did I get but fog?
Oh, no.
And so it wasn't a very good sight that way. So, but I went on back to base, and that was my visit then. And on the 26th of August, we loaded on our ships, and I was on one. And it was USAT Cristobal. And my first sergeant gave me and another fellow a duty to help the Navy if they needed help on firing their big, I don't know how big it was, the shells they had, but the other guy was assigned to pick up this shells and hand them to the people who would and put them in the breech. Mm-hmm. And then I was given a pair of gloves that were asbestos and went clear up to my elbows, and I was supposed to catch the hot shell when it came out of the breech.
Oh, my.
Fortunately, we didn't have to do this. But it did give us a benefit, because we were part of the crew, and we could stay in there where the gun turret was, and it was hot in August, and the guys came out and were playing cards and reading and whatever, but we didn't have to be crowded up with them, because we had our own little space.
Yeah.
We arrived in, well, we had, I didn't know at the time how many ships, but we had four for the division.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out later that there were 56 ships in this convoy, and there were some Navy escorts, of course, and all the rest of them were supply ships.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got into the English Channel, it was the 7th of September, and my ship stopped at Utah Beach. The other three went on around Normandy, because it's not a smooth front or something like that. And it was, mm-hmm, a place for them to offload. They'd gotten some temporary plank, but we didn't all get off the ship that first day, and so we spent, a few of us stayed on the next morning after breakfast. The Navy came up with the little ships that. And you've seen people on movies how they went off the side of a ship on kind of a rope deal. That's how I went. Mm-hmm. I threw my duffel bag down in the Navy thing, and so the rest of the guys, until he got a load, and then little ship could get up on the beach and lower the front part of it, so we didn't have to walk in the water. We just got right on the beach.
Oh, neat.
We went to temporary places for a while, and I stayed with the Company A of the 415th because that was my company, and I didn't know I'd been on detached service all the time I'd been in the Army.
What does that mean exactly, detached service?
Well, that means I belong to a company, but I'm on service someplace else.
So you're borrowed.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I see.
And then it was quite a little while, and then we finally got enough equipment. We had trouble getting equipment, too. Mm. And so then we went on, got trucks, and we went in through Brussels, Belgium, and camped out side of Brussels. But they had these electric trains, and we got there on I think it was a Saturday, and so we could get on those trains, and a bunch of us from the division did this. And there's four of us from division headquarters that went together, and we walked a little while, and the MP stopped us and says, "This is off limits to you guys. You can't go stay here." And they took us in and kept us in a room with one light bulb. And then after a couple of hours, they told us, "Well, you can go back to your units now."
Okay.
And tell them that you were here. But there's about 1,000 guys out in that day, and I don't know why they picked on four of us from the division headquarters, but they did.
Okay.
And so we had no problem. And I don't remember how long we were there, but the English and the Canadians were trying to get the port of Antwerp, get all the Germans out of it so that we could have another port to get our supplies in.
Okay.
And they were having problems, so our division commander had one of the regiments go in and give them the aid, and it wasn't too long till that was not German anymore. Mm. But then that was actually in Belgium, and then we went on into the Netherlands, and we were in the part where they have the canals, mm-hmm. and the fields are all real flat. Mm. And our infantry was having quite a time because they couldn't do anything in the daytime because the Germans had their machine guns set up on top of those canal walls. And so the division commander says, "We'll do this at night." And so he would wait till maybe 2 o'clock in the morning, and hopefully it'd be a dark night and no big moon because mm-hmm. they couldn't have gone in. But they were crawling all the way on, and it's probably 150 feet across it, and they were crawling on their belly to get over there and throw the charges into their station and route them out of it. And a little later on, as I was pulling night duty, I'd hear this noise, and I look up, and there's a V-1 rocket going across the sky, and I could see it was going, and you could see the flame coming out the back, but it was going slow, and it sounded like a big old motorboat, but it kept on going. But if it flamed out, we went in and didn't know where it was going to land, so we hit the ground anyhow, but it wasn't ever close. Oh. And we were there for clear up to, I think it was, no, it was in November sometime. We moved on up into Germany.
Okay.
And we went in through Aachen, and I thought, boy, they had to get something big enough to scrape the bricks off the streets because there's so many bricks there that they would have wrecked our tires on all our vehicles.
So it was rubble from explosions in the streets?
Well, the First Army had been in there, and they'd created some of it and received some of it.
Tonight. Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay.
And then around Thanksgiving, our cooks did their best to try to give us a home-fixed Thanksgiving dinner. Aww. We had the turkey. But I can't remember what else, but I know they tried the best they could. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was that night or the next night, somebody had gone up into the town of Eschweiler to see where we could set up our office for the division, and we were staying on some tents, they got three little vehicles to take some of us from the defense platoon to go in and clean out the buildings to make it be able to come right in and set up. Yeah. And I was the last one, so they told me to stay out and watch our three vehicles. And I stayed in front of the building and stayed right up close, because as I looked to my left, I could see flashes of cannons, some kind of artillery going off, and I could hear some of the noise. And I think that's as close as I got to the front lines, but it was close enough. After about between a half an hour and 45 minutes, there was a whole bunch of guys come marching up the street, and they all had their hands behind their heads, and the MPs were taking these prisoners up to where the stockade was be to keep them. And they I don't know whether they gave up or if they were captured.
So that was German prisoners?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like if that was the closest you got to the front, so you didn't sustain injuries?
No, I didn't.
No, okay. Well, so what happened after that?
Well, the division well set up there. The command center did everything to get us going to wherever we're going next.
Okay.
And so I was pulling guard duty at night right at the corner of the office building. And the Germans had sent a few shells in, and one evening it was just about dusk, and the house right across from this office building had a brick wall around the outside yard, so this shell lit inside that. But there was a piece of shrapnel right at my feet. I didn't hear the noise that hit, but it was there at my feet. It was just a little piece that would only be about an inch and a half long, and if it were square, it would be a quarter inch. But it is as rough a piece of metal as you ever saw. So I picked it up, put it in my pocket for a souvenir, but someplace along the line I lost it, so I didn't get home with that one. But another few days, a shell came in and hit the office building and hit right where the signal guy was in watching, operating his switchboard. It was a dud, so it didn't explode, but it broke both of his legs.
Oh, my gosh.
But if it had exploded, he and maybe many more would be injured or maybe killed.
Okay. That was a little too close to home then.
Yeah.
Okay. So how long were you overseas in total?
10 months and 1 week.
10 months. And did you have any other experiences that were, you know, like were you a big part of any kind of particular battle or on the fringes of it? Or,
well, it was on the fringes of the Battle of the Bulge.
Oh, gosh.
But we stayed where we were, but we took over the 28th Division's front and covered all the space, and they went on and got in the battle.
Okay.
But I was still pulling guard duty, and it was cold.
Oh.
And it snowed, and even the Germans said that was as cold as time they'd ever had, and more snow. And so that was a pretty good verification that we had it.
Right.
And then, I don't know, from then we went along and got up to an area where that we could get across the Rhine River. And there was a railroad track bridge that they had, the Germans hadn't knocked out. I think it had the material to dynamite or whatever they used to blow it down, but it was so old, and we got too much load on it, and that loaded the bridge down into the river. So the infantry was grabbing on the tanks and riding them because they couldn't keep up, and they were moving so fast right at that point. And they moved fast enough that they didn't take us out of our office. We stayed there and didn't have anything to do because we didn't have anything to write up in our reports.
Okay.
But the next day they did come back and they built a big pontoon bridge across the Rhine, and that's how I went across to that part.
And this whole time, were you communicating and writing letters back home hearing from people?
Sure.
Yeah.
But they were censored if you weren't careful.
Right.
Some of the stuff would be blocked out.
Uh-huh.
But, no, I had some of the young people around with sent me cards. Three or four of them were girls and then one or two fellas. And, of course, I got some from my parents.
Right.
And some of one aunt at least, and I don't know, but whatever it was, we our mailbox was just mail call. You go when they got a supply of mail and go and wait and hope you're going to get a letter.
Yeah, okay.
And sometimes we did. Sometimes we got packages. I got a package one time of cookies, but they were all crumbles, but we ate the crumbles.
I'm sure you did. Okay.
But further on, we were in the final place. Well, we went through a place called Delitzsch, and then we went on into, I call it Halle, but it's Halle, and they say it's Halle.
Halle, okay.
And the people there wanted to just give up and let us take over.
Yeah.
But the German general wouldn't agree. The city was working this to try it, not the military.
Okay.
And they tried to get the general to German one to give up. But he said, no, I can't.
Okay.
Hitler would kill my family if I did. So he took his troops and went farther south. We were coming in from the north side.
Uh-huh.
And so then that was our final advance.
Okay.
And the people there, there's a small cottage that the general met with the people from the town and told them what they had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is a kind of a memorial.
Okay.
Because, and right across the road, there's a small concrete monument in telling about the 104th Infantry Division.
Okay. Got your hat. Yeah. So.
Yeah. But we moved back into Delitzsch, and actually the building we moved into during the war was making airplane parts. But before the war, it was a chocolate factory.
Okay.
But we moved our office in there, and that's at that point we had to check every fellow's record and figure out their points. And the number of points was, I don't know, remember what all of it, but part of it was the time that they'd been in service, some of the what rank they may have attained, and then there were a few other things, but I can't remember the full details. But we made up the cards, and then had each person come and check with what we had, verify that we had done it right.
Right.
And but one fella came up, and he said it was right, and it was an Indian boy, and he signed an X. Well, he'd been with us for quite a little while, and I couldn't believe that because somebody had been signing the payroll for him. And so I was just surprised as I could be because I didn't think we had anybody in the service that couldn't read and write.
And he was a Native American?
Yes.
Okay. How about that?
But the lieutenant says, "Oh, you just go ahead and sign his mark and sign your name."
Mm-hmm.
But a young fellow from the Russians had been liberated by us, and he was wanting to do things because he was safe.
Oh.
And so he was eating, and he'd been around where the officers were eating, and they'd, instead of getting a piece of chicken and eating it like the troops did, they took fork and knife and peeled the meat off the bones. And this poor guy was trying to eat the same way because he was just a young guy, a teenager.
Mm-hmm. A young Russian boy?
Yes, sir. He was a Russian boy. Of course, he couldn't talk to us, and we couldn't talk to him.
No. But he was just hanging out to be safe and just stay with you guys?
Well, that was at just approximately the end. And so that's we met them, or they met us, whichever it was.
Okay, yeah. So that was near the close of World War II then, and it's almost all over at that point.
Well, in Europe.
Okay, yeah.
It was on May the 8th was the E-Day, and it wasn't too long before we got orders to get on the trains, and they weren't very fast. They were small, and so it took us 3 days to go from there to Normandy. And when we got there, they called the camp Camp Lucky Strike, but there was a whole big stack of coke cases, and so there wasn't any ice, but I got a chance to get a Coke for the first time in a year.
Okay.
So I ate that, drank that hot Coke.
I bet it tasted really good, too.
Sure. But then we got on the ship on the 26th of June and headed back to the States. And it took us 7 days. Going over took 11, but we went in a zigzag way to confuse the Germans.
Right.
And we arrived in New York on July 3rd, and they welcomed us with some of their fireboats where they shot off water.
Yeah.
And then we went on into Camp Kilmer to get our travel vouchers. And so I got my travel voucher, and I looked at it, and it says, get on a train and go to Kansas City and stay with your parents for 30 days and get back on the train and go to Camp San Luis Obispo, California and start to prepare to go in the invasion of Japan. And so when we got out there, all the talk of that it was going to be the bloodiest battle of the war. And that didn't excite us at all.
Oh, my.
And then I got there on the 3rd of August, and it was either 2 or 3 days, and they dropped the first bomb, and that made us feel a little better.
Yeah.
And then 12 days later, when they dropped the second one, that was really good because we were sure that that would really do it.
That's it, right.
So
did you guys, at that time, was it known kind of what the atomic bomb was really? You know, what was the popular understanding of a nuclear bomb, an atomic bomb?
Well, we knew that they were working on one, but we didn't know they were going to use it.
Right.
Because that hush-hush.
Yeah. And so it was when it happened and the news came out, everybody kind of understood the war will most likely be over now, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
It's they disbanded our division about the end of October. And so that took away my job as company clerk. But I was moved into the separation center and typed up the final pay voucher and their travel voucher until December the 12th. And I had an uncle by marriage who was a lieutenant colonel, and he stopped by there that day on the 12th. And he says, "Hey, Keith, when are you going to get out?" I said, "Tomorrow." He says, "Can't you get out today?" I said, "Well, I don't know." And so he looked over at the officer and he says, "Can Keith get out?" "Sure, he can go." And so the guys had already typed up my discharge, and they says, "You're going to have to retype it because it made one day in longevity for me less and $2 in pay. But I willingly typed it up and accepted it and walked out. But there's a guy wanting to ask, he asked me if I want to join the reserves. I said, no, I am done.
Good for you. Yeah. So do you keep in touch with any of the buddies that you were over there with?
Well, it's a little difficult now because there's so few of us. The division had reunions once a year, and they started the first one before I even got discharged. And then they went for 65 years, going all over the country, not in different split. And the first time they came to Kansas City, it was 1989. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the division people in the area formed the whole thing. Mm-hmm. The places to stay, the places to go see, mm-hmm. big for someplace big enough for the big banquet at the end.
Yeah.
And that was, none of us had ever done that. And so, but we got, I think there were about 30 of us that worked on it. Mm-hmm. And when the day came, and I wasn't with anything with listening to men, getting them, telling them where their state or anything, but mm-hmm. on the first day that we started going on tours, I had the key check to Truman Library and had three buses, and I led the leading one. My wife was on the second bus, and then I don't know who took the third one, but we went out there, and I can't remember how big the check was, but it took three buses. And after we got through, I asked the drivers if they had some time to go up the square so they could see President Truman's office that he had before he became the president.
Oh, right.
And so they said, sure, and we did. Mm-hmm. And the next day I had two buses to go to Fort Leavenworth. Mm-hmm. And my wife went with me, and I don't know who took the second bus, but we got out down there, and we were guided to a museum that I'd never heard of that they had. They were all horse-drawn carriages. And, of course, the biggest one they wanted to show us was Lincoln's when he came out here in the Midwest to talk to the people to try to get them to vote for him.
So his campaign carriage, I guess. Yeah. So when you got done with the war, you came home and you married and all that, and did you guys have any kids? When did you get married?
We were married on June the 21st, 1946, and we had three children, and our son died with cancer when he was 60.
Oh.
But the two girls are still here, and they have, after 65 years, the division quit the reasons, but our kids, since we were Timberwolves, our kids were pups.
Okay.
And so they got some information and formed their own group to have the division reunions, and they've done it now. It's either 7 or 8 years, and I've gone to every one of those. And on the Sunday that's in there, we always have a memorial service.
Yeah.
And we have two candelabras that each have seven candles on it, and then we have one candle we put in between, and that's the one for the general. And usually an official, we have, puts that one out.
Okay.
But I served as one of the people for several years to snuff out a candle. Oh. And we had 14, and then before it was all over with, we had added, or not added, just took one of the candles and had that for the widows.
Okay. Well, that's nice. Yeah. So tell me about your experience in the post-war. You did some battlefield tours?
Yes.
What was that like?
Well, We went on the first one that we knew about, and that was in 1994, which was 50 years after D-Day. And they had one tour they called the Grand Tour, mm-hmm. and that one started in England. And all I saw of England was the White Cliffs of Dover when we went into the channel.
Right.
So I talked to my wife, and I said, we better see about going. We might never get another chance to go. So
yeah.
We signed up for that, and they'd given us the word that when we got to the airport that there'd be a bus there to pick us up and bring us on down into London.
Okay.
Well, we got there. No bus.
Uh-oh.
Nobody. So the went up to the information desk. Oh, we've been waiting for you. You're supposed to get a cab mm-hmm. and take, and I couldn't remember the hotel name, but he knew where it was, so mm-hmm. and he'd get paid when he got delivered there.
Okay.
And Mary Lou and I both thought he must have found the hardest, longest way to get there, because it seemed like it was forever before we ever got there.
Okay.
But he got a pretty good fee, I think, for our trip.
Okay.
And we were there a couple of 3 days, and the first day we got to go into the war room where...
Churchill's war room?
Churchill's
okay.
war room. And it was down in a hole, and there was 7 feet of concrete above it, so they'd had to pour it enough to have it hold to two sides and then dug it out.
Mm-hmm.
And the telephone service down there looked like the same thing that we'd had out in the open for the infantry guys to use to get messages back to the back.
Yeah.
But then we got to see the changing of the guard. Mm-hmm. And the outer, they had some big cannons that must have been all taken off of ships, because they were big and out in mm-hmm. an area near there.
Right.
And then we went into a cathedral there close by, and gosh, they really go for the colored windows and a design to meet something kind of that they're celebrating.
Okay.
But across the front of it, so much gold and the things you imagine, they used all they could find.
Yeah.
But some of the women wanted to go to that big department store that's known worldwide.
Oh, Harrod's?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so my wife went, but I don't think she bought anything. But then we started to go to the western part on a Friday evening and got on the buses and got into the traffic jams. They have traffic jams on Friday night, same as they have in the United States.
Yeah.
And he finally told us, he says, well, we aren't going to make the time. They're going to be closed before we get there. So we went on to the motel where we're going to spend the night.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next morning we got up and they took us over to the Shafe headquarters. Mm-hmm. And it was out kind of in the country and not near any water, but they said it was a Navy base. But it's a story and a half white clapboard house and real beautiful lawn, several acres of it.
Nice.
And we walked in the door, and right on our left, there was a wall that had a big map on it. And that map had four big red arrows on it. And the one to the right went kind of in a circle, and then a point, and then two went straight. And the one on the left then was a circular type. But on each one, there were written in black so people could read which units were going to be where and where they were going to land.
Okay.
But up atop the map, there was what Eisenhower said to start the invasion.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And it was a very good statement.
Do you remember?
Okay, let's go.
Okay, let's go?
Yes.
That's it? Okay.
And we went through some of the other towns. I know we went through one pottery shop, and it's some that probably people knew the name, because I'm sure they shipped some to the States.
Mm-hmm.
But then we got I don't know which, but I guess about the next day we got on the ferry, mm-hmm. and we had three buses, mm-hmm. and that was 120 people in class, and then. And I don't know how many 18-wheelers they put on. This thing was huge.
Really?
And they even had restaurants in there so we could get something to eat while we were on.
Oh, neat.
And so we went across, and you've heard how rough that channel is.
Yeah.
That day, it didn't have a ripple. It was so smooth that we couldn't believe we were having this great deal.
That's nice.
And we went to Cannes in France and got off there. And I can't remember what we did that, but I know we went to the cemetery. And that's the one that was at, it's the biggest one that we had. It's had, I think, about 9,000. And but I went on over. Our bus went to the Utah Beach because mm-hmm. that's where I came in, and they had a little museum built there. And so when we went in, at least one person spoke English.
Good.
And so they said, "Did any of you land here on Utah Beach?" And I said, "I did. I was the only one our bus had had." And so they invited me to go over to a counter, and they got my name and mm-hmm. filled out a, they called it a what did they call it? Anyhow, it's different. We would call it a certificate. They call it a diploma.
Okay.
Yeah. And just put down the date I was there and the date I had returned. And,
okay.
And then when we got home, Mary Lou put it in a frame, and I have that up over my desk.
Nice. Yeah. So where else did you go during that trip?
Well, we went into, well, Holland, I guess, first.
Mm-hmm.
And those people just welcomed us with open hearts mm-hmm. and arms.
Yeah.
And
that's great.
They treated the veterans better than they did their own families, and I'm not kidding at all.
Okay.
And they'd set it up where the guys in the different regiments had crawled across those flat areas and mm-hmm. put up signs that the 413th was here and 414th was here and the 415th was here, and so the guys knew. If they couldn't remember after 50 years, where they went across.
Okay.
And then they went by one building that had a lot of shrapnel edges, sittings under brick.
Mm-hmm.
But the Germans had used it as a temporary hospital, and mm-hmm. so did we. But we had a service on a Sunday there in a chapel, mm-hmm. and we had three coaches, and so we'd come into and I can't remember which town it was, what the names are a little unusual for us,
mm-hmm.
but they had a nice cathedral there, and they actually had us go down in the basement for coffee and cookies while we waited for the service to begin, and then they were waiting for a photographer to come, and so all of us lined up on the front steps of that building, and they took our picture then before we went, and they had a real nice service for us.
Nice.
And we have a history book, and it included just up to, well, just end of the war to begin with, but after we went there in 94, the newer editions has some of the pictures, and that shows the picture of us standing in front of that cathedral for one of them.
Great.
And then there's one out in Colorado Springs. They've got a park called Memorial Park,
mm-hmm.
and there's so many different units that train in that general area,
mm-hmm.
and go course, the Timberwolves have one now. It's maybe a little point to our weather, but it's neat, and it was really neat. And both sides have got a message on it. And I don't remember what it says, but I got the book, and I could let you read it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we went clear on down as far as Berlin, and there we were stopped at a hotel every night, and we got up for the next morning. Bags supposed to be at the door at 6:30 to load on the bus, except for one night. We spent two nights in the same hotel.
Oh.
But our tour guide was a Cockney English gal, and she told the girls, says, well, you can wash your dainties here while you're in.
Okay.
Well, that's what she said.
Yeah.
And if she saw a McDonald's coming up in view, she'd have us looking out the other side of the windows because she didn't want but she was a real character.
Yeah. So what would you like for people to know about your experience in World War II overseas? If you could summarize it in just a few statements, how did it impact your life to be a part of that?
Well, not like it would have been if I'd been frontline.
Mm.
Because they saw things that I did not see.
Right.
And I don't envy them at all. But I saw some pretty nice, that Halle, Germany, when we went on this tour I was just telling about, that was our first. And our tour guide was an Englishman, and he'd asked before time, and I things I'd wanted to know in special, and I said, well, I was stuck in an office, and I didn't get to look around in Halle at all. And so we went up into the, I guess it was City Hall, and the mayor came in there, and so she didn't speak English. And she was elected for 7 years, and so she had one more year on her. And so she welcomed me in there. But then we looked around the town, and John Frederick, what's his last name? The guy, music writer, John Frederick.
Sousa? Oh,
yeah. The house is right there.
Oh,
and I've got a picture of me standing in front of his house.
Okay.
And after it was repainted and everything.
So you finally got to see some of the town.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what would you like to share with young people today that might find themselves in military service? Any words of wisdom?
Well, it's kind of hard now because their systems are so much up in technology, but if they go in there, they'll learn things that they can get, when they get out, they can hopefully use in the civil process when they back out.
Yeah.
But it hasn't worked that way for some of them, but I'm sorry about that. I sure wish it did.
Yeah. Well, do you have any last thoughts about your military service or anything else you'd like to share with us today?
Well, I think it was a lot of experience for me because I got to see not all the world, but quite a bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went back in on a tour in 06, I got to go to the city where the three country leaders had their conference or something.
Right, right.
And we had a German person there that told us about where President Truman had it was kind of like a nursing home where you got different almost wings, and where his was. And she told us to look at the lake out behind there. And she says, when the Russians were in here, they had a wall built through that lake so none of the people in the east could get over in the west.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a very, very rich experience that you got to have. And I'm glad that you got home safely and that you were able to have a wonderful family and share your thoughts with us today. So I'll just say thank you for your service, Keith Zimmerman, and thank you for being here with us today to share your story at MGC.
I was glad to do it. It's something that I've told this small bits of it to all people all the time, so yeah. This would be a little more maybe than what I've gone out to other people with.
Okay, well, I think that concludes our interview session today. So thanks so much, Keith, for being with us.
You're welcome. My pleasure.